This is Channel 2.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
Welcome back to the Business Bunker show here on Channel Radio in association with Biz Radio. You're listening to me, Paul Andrews, and the stunkingly gorgeous Jill Serkin.
Hello. Yes, waiting for a fig roll, I think I am.
What are you waiting for?
Yeah, well,
they're right in front of you.
I know.
You're too busy playing with your videos.
I've got all these to take.
Yeah.
First of all. So I've read all my emails, Paul Andrews.
Have you? I've got dozens left. Anyway, we got somebody nice to talk to.
Oh, well, Wayne Cunnington has just chirped in and he says at least Paul doesn't have an otter problem.
Otter?
Well, you got a squirrel problem.
Why should I have an
Well, because we were talking about otters.
Oh, we were on the Scoff and Quash show.
On the Superior show.
Yeah, and I haven't had otters.
No, never had an otter pie.
No, I don't think I fancy an otter pie. Well,
they'd be fishy, I think. I think we'd have a sort of marshy taste.
Yeah, no, I haven't had any kind of...
Otter leg.
I've got some great crested newts.
I'd love one. Can I borrow one for my new
pond? If you can catch them, you can, yeah.
And have you got any frog spawn?
Frogs are a nuisance and snakes.
No, but have you got any frog spawn?
Not at the moment. Well,
in spring, will you bring me a little bucket in?
In spring, yeah. Blooming things are
and
a nuisance.
Can't you get one of the little crested newts in a matchbox and bring it to me?
You can't catch them. You can't catch the
buggers. Are they fast?
Yeah, they're really fast. And they're protected as well. You're not allowed to mess with them.
Okay, but next door have managed to build a whole housing estate.
They built a whole housing estate.
Why didn't you pop some over there?
They built a whole housing estate around my house and it really destroyed my lake. And but apparently that doesn't count. But if I go in there with a net and try and get one for you, I will know. Can't have that.
Also, funny enough, I've been trying to find a fishing net to hoik out the leaves of my new pond.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Can you get one anywhere? It's very strange. I can't get a little fishing net just to hoik out the leaves.
All right, okay.
I'm going to have to go to a kiddies shop, aren't I, for beach shop.
Or you could get a swimming pool. Haven't you got a net for your swimming pool?
Yeah, I'm not going to use that in my pond and then put it in my swimming pool. No, my new husband told me to do.
Well, buy a new one for your swimming pool and use the old one for the pond. What's the matter with you?
Well, that...
Improvised woman.
I think they're a bit expensive. Anything to do with swimming pools, like 50 quid.
Oh, yeah, hold on.
I want a little fishing net.
Hold on a minute. You live at the seaside.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying.
You live at the seaside.
I just need a little kiddies net.
Why don't you go down the shops and buy a stick of rock, a candy floss, a Kiss Me Quick hat and a fishing net?
That's what I need to do. George's Mini Mart will have one.
Yeah, of course they will.
But... As a Tankerton liver.
Oh, Tankerton. Joanne, she lives in Tankerton.
As opposed to Whitstable, which is just far too busy at the weekend to go in. And I went to a couple of garden centres that sell fishy things and aquariums and fish, but they didn't have a net.
Why not a rake and just rake them to the edge and then lift them
out? I tried that. Now, that's a very good idea. And I did try that. I've got one of those sort of rakes with a curly bit.
Yeah.
And I did that, but some of the leaves fall through.
Right, now, here's what you do.
Depends on the shape of the leaf.
Here's what you do. You get the rake and an old pair of tights.
Yes.
And put the old pair of tights over the rake.
Is clever. Could you market that?
Yeah, exactly.
What would you call it?
I don't know. I don't know.
But then if you pull it too tight, then the little prongs would come through.
It doesn't matter, though.
It would still work.
Yeah,
because it would still be smaller than a leaf.
Exactly.
I'm going, have you got any tights on you?
Not on me, no.
Yeah. I'm going home.
I used them all to clean my lake.
Yeah, well, anyway, put me on your list for your spawn and your little
frogs are the bane of my life.
Why are they? They're lovely.
They keep getting in my swimming pool and dying.
And then the newts eat the frog spawn.
The newts eat the frog spawn. For some reason,
yours don't.
No, newts are brighter than frogs, yeah? I've never had a newt in my swimming pool, but I get dozens of frogs and snakes.
What kind of snakes? Rattle?
No, grass snakes and...
Spitting cobra.
Grass snakes and vipers and adders and boa constrictors.
Spitting cobra,
Anacondas.
But do they survive in your pool?
No, they all die.
But frogs can swim.
Yes, but it's full of...
Chlorine,
isn't it?
Ah, well, think what it does to you then.
Yeah, but
it's probably why you're so bad.
But it's only the stupid animals that go in there and get killed. When there's a dirty great lake for them to swim in, but no, they have to get out and get in a swimming pool.
When my son, Shay, who's 26 now, and he's a big boy and he lives in Greenwich, got a proper job and all that, that. But when he was about four, he woke up and he's on a top bunk and he said, Mom, you know, and it was about 6 in the morning. I went, what is it? Go back to sleep. And he said, there's a frog in my bedroom. The cat had brought it upstairs and dropped it and it was leaping about. And I said, don't be so stupid, you know, but there was an actual frog leaping about.
The worst thing I've had in my swimming pool is a sheep.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. That's really sad. Did you eat it?
No.
You could have barbecued it after.
Well.
In fact, what you'd done is you'd pickled it, hadn't you?
Well, the funniest thing was, actually, it had fallen in there some months before because the pond was, the swimming pool was covered for
winter. I'm sorry if
you
were having your lunch.
And the farmer next door called Chris Ra.
What is his name?
Chris Ra. I said Chris.
Not Chris Barr.
No, Chris Ra. I see what you did there. I said to him.
Poor Joan is wondering why she's.
Yeah. I said to him, one of your sheep's died in my swimming pool. Oh. And he came around and went, oh, sorry about that, mate. And I went, how are we going to get it out? And he went, I'll have to get a crane because it's had all its wool on. And it
was heavy,
been soaking in the swimming pool for like 2 months. And my pool man, also called Chris, everyone was called Chris then, and my pool man turned up and he went, we could just turn the heater on and chop up a load of carrots and onions and
make
the world's biggest lamb stew. I went, I think it's a bit work on that. We had to get a crane. It was so heavy.
It would have been very heavy, yeah.
It was so heavy. We had to get this crane to get the blooming thing out.
So it wandered into your garden and then wandered, it fell in your pool.
What it did is it didn't realise it walked across the cover. And the cover just turned over, flipped it underneath, and then settled itself back again.
So it was under the cover.
So if you looked, you couldn't see it, and it just drowned. Yeah.
You should have done it on a wool wash. That's the trouble.
Yeah. But the funny thing was, where I live now, that was at my old house. Where I live now, I had a sheep in my swimming pool there as well.
Oh, my goodness.
Right? And Jeff, who was a farmer there, his sheep kept getting into my garden and eating all my plants, and I was going bananas at him. And I'm going, Jeff, you got to fix the fence. It's your fence. Fix it and stop your damn sheep. And he went, oh, mate, they're Welsh Angley sheep or something. I go, yeah, what's that mean? They jump. He said, the buggers jump and they can jump really high.
Really?
I went, well, they think they're goats. Well, he went, yeah, they're fairly much like goats. They'll jump. I went, we'll put a higher fence in. Anyway, I called him one day. I went, one of them's got in my swimming pool and drowned. Oh, sorry. And he's only little, Jeff. He's about 5'4", little bloke. He came round. He got into my swimming pool, just rolled his trousers up, got in my swimming pool, got the sheep under one arm, picked it up and walked out with it. He went, I'll be off then. I went, right, okay.
And it was dead?
It was dead, yeah. But again, it had all its wool on. I've got no idea how much it weighed, but he must have been strong. So I was really nice to him after that. Oh,
well, that must have been on a non-wool wash because it must have shrunk.
Yeah,
so
probably.
It was lighter.
Yeah, I think, yeah.
Yeah. You should have asked him just to give you a few lamb chops, though, to make up for it. That's what I would have done. I'd have said, a few for the freezer.
Yeah.
Because I've had a whole hogget in my freezer. It's been delicious.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, nothing like a hogget. I'm checking the Twitter. Wayne Cunnington has chirped in. It's like the Wayne Cunnington show now.
No, hold on.
What have you got?
Hold on. Gemma Fairclough Haynes has sent me a gif of sheep jumping.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. She's listening, bless her. So Wayne has said, well, he sent me a little thing of koi, who's nicked all my carp, and it's otter scoffs 100 fish. That would have been very good. Why didn't you send me that on the Scoff and Quaff show, Wayne Cunnington? And then he says, that's why he said you didn't have an otter problem. That's where it came from, a bit random, right. I thought. And then he says his plastic pond sprung a leak, so he's going to have to pull it out. Yeah.
Right, I want to talk to Joanne. Because,
I would like to.
You know, I was about to introduce her when you interrupted me and started on this silliness about sheep.
Well, you were talking about crested newts at the time.
Yeah. Anyway, listen, it's an absolute pleasure to welcome onto the show for the very first time, Joanna Rawbone. Joanna, thank you so much for joining us. We're going to call you Jo from now on.
Yeah.
And there's a whole reason behind that, which we're not going to tell you. Jo, thank you for joining us. Why don't you kick off by telling us a little bit about Jo, and then we'll talk about your business.
Okay, so I'm a local girl. I've lived in Kent all my life. I'm mid-60s, so I'm kind of in the age bracket of you guys too.
Yeah, we decided earlier before we went on air that we're going to have a new show called Three Old Codgers.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm definitely an old codger.
Yeah.
In fact, I received a big fat envelope through the post yesterday from Scottish Widows saying, preparing for your retirement. It's like, I'm not preparing for it yet, so don't make me do that. Married, step-grandmother, and so obviously stepmother and, yeah, living life.
Cool. Good. So you have a very interesting business.
I do.
Flourishing Introverts.
Indeed.
I love the name.
I love the name. It's great.
I love the name.
Flourishing Introverts.
Flourishing Introverts. What I'd like to do, if it's okay with you, Joe, is first of all, we want to talk about the business and we want to talk about introversion and extroversion and all those things.
Yeah.
But first and foremost, I'm also interested in your business journey. Is at what point you started this business and why you started it?
Yeah. Okay. I may have to go back a little bit further than that. So I knew as a kid that I was different from some of friends and family, etc. I'd take myself to bed early to read in the summer because I loved escaping. And I got called all sorts of horrible names, kind of stuck up, antisocial, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And then in my 30s, I did the Myers-Briggs type indicator, which is when most introverts figure out what's different about them.
Yeah.
But it didn't help me understand how to really play to my introvert strengths. What it showed me was the difference between me and the extroverts.
Yeah.
And all the people who were successful around me were extroverts. So I thought, I've got to be more like them. So then for a couple of decades, I pretended to be more extroverted, got myself to the point of introvert burnout. And that's the point at which, because I was working all over the world delivering training courses, because I'm a trainer, coach, facilitator. And the one thing I noticed wherever I worked in the world was it was the quiet ones who kept their heads down doing great work who were overlooked and undervalued time after time after time. So I got a bee in my bonnet. And in 2019, I delivered a TEDx talk around shifting the extroversion bias to unlock the potential of introverts. And that has been the focus of my what's going to be my legacy work from here on till I turn my toes up, really.
Fantastic. Now, I was saying earlier, and Jules wouldn't have it, that I'm actually an introvert. According to the Myers-Briggs introversion, extroversion. And there was another chap that used to do a lot of stuff about this as well, Hans Einsenk.
Right.
Hans Einsenk?
Yeah.
Yeah. He did a lot of stuff on introversion, extroversion. And so I want to just kind of explore, because a lot of people go, no, you can't be an introvert. Well, of course you can, because there's you know, people have very I don't know what the word is really, but very fixed ideas of what introversion means. They just think you mean shy. Yeah. And it doesn't really mean that, does it?
No, there are still so many myths and misconceptions about introversion. Yeah. And if you, even to this day, if you Google introvert or introversion, you'll come up with words like shy, loner, autist, you know, all sorts of things that nobody in their right mind would say, yeah, that's me, I'm an introvert, because it's like you're not going to own up to that. Whereas if you Google extrovert, it's kind of life and soul of the party, energetic, you know, all things that actually sound better.
Pain in the backside.
Absolutely. Never stops talking. So the thing for me is I'm a Jungian at heart, and Jung was the one who originally kind of defined what it means to be introverted. And what he said is it's where we get our energy from and what drains our batteries.
Yeah.
So for an introvert, we get our mental and, in fact, emotional and social energy from being on our own, or as my husband and I talk about quite often, in companionable silence.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
We'll sit happily or go out to dinner. And we've seen people look at us really sadly, and I'm sure they're thinking, oh, look at those poor old two. They've got nothing to say to each other.
Yeah.
But actually, we love being in each other's company, and we're very good at actually not kind of filling in every moment with chatter.
Yeah.
Of course, what energizes an extrovert is social interaction, active experiences and change. So the very thing that charges the extrovert is what drains the introvert battery. And that's where some of the tension occurs. But once we realize that up to 50% of any population identifies as an introvert, what we realize is there's an awful lot of people who are being hard done by, actually, because education is set up for extroverts, business is set up for extroverts. So a lot of introverts are either having to pretend or actually not reach more of their potential because they don't fit with the expected norm of extroversion.
Absolutely. It's interesting, isn't it? I know quite a few actors, comedians and people like that, and an awful lot of them are introverts.
Absolutely.
And despite the fact that they perform to big audiences.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the classic introvert in the music business was Bill Wyman, the Rolling Stones bass player. He would perform with his back to the audience. But most of those people do the job they do because it's a performance.
Yes.
Yeah. It's not them being them. It's them performing.
Yeah.
As you say, it's not... I mean, I'm sure some introverts are shy, but it's not about shyness.
No. It's
exactly as you say. It's where you feel most comfortable.
Is it about a containment?
The challenge is that the brains of introverts are already overstimulated. So we're overstimulated mentally. Therefore, we don't need that additional external stimulation.
Right.
So put us in a busy, noisy, loud environment, and it's like, oh, kind of too much, completely overwhelmed.
Mm.
So it's not about containment. We do spend a lot of time in our heads because that's where we're already stimulated. We don't need to go anywhere else for that. So what it is actually is about protection. So maybe not containment, but it is about protection and having boundaries so that, for instance, when I knew I was coming on here and listening to you two, it's like there's a lot of banter and chat goes on. I needed to do a proper pre-charge before I got here to make sure I had enough energy to see me through the interview. But I can tell you, as soon as I'm done, I'm going to be away and I'm probably going to go either, if the weather's all right, I'm going to go for a walk on my own.
Yeah.
Or I might go and just kind of, you know, have a quiet coffee somewhere just to top that battery up again.
Yeah.
Very wise words.
Because introverts can't keep going like this forever.
So would you then do something like be in touch with nature, for example?
Yeah. So typically introverts they usually have cats or dogs. There's something about kind of the companionship that comes with an animal. They often love nature. They're often very creative. You know, there are whole communities of creative introverts who are either the actors or the writers. J.K. Rowling, classic introverted writer. Artists, craftsmen, all sorts of different crafts, often introverts. So that's how they'll recharge, because they can lose themselves in that activity. And they don't need other people to bounce on.
Yeah, and I'm assuming that with introversion and extroversion, it's not an either or thing. There's a continuum. There's a there's a range. There are some people that are kind of borderline introvert, extrovert, and all the way from one end of the spectrum to the other.
There was a term that was bandied around a little while ago, and ironically, Jung did use this term, but people have now misapplied it, and it's ambivert.
Right.
And for people who like to recharge on their own but are quite good in this kind of chat format that we're doing here would say, oh, actually, I'm a bit of both. So they started calling themselves an ambivert. But actually, an ambivert is someone who is equally recharged by being in any noisy, loud, busy environment and by being on their own.
Yep.
What most of us are is either an extroverted introvert or an introverted extrovert. Right. So you're right. There's a kind of spectrum that happens here. Yep. And the questionnaire that I help people figures out which of the six types of introvert they are.
Yeah.
So they might be a classic, which is almost everything we imagine, but then they might be one of the extroverted introverts or a blend of those. So if you get someone who's a connected, dynamic, sociable, engaging introvert, everyone around them is going to say, there's no way you're an introvert, because what they see is the behaviour. What they don't see is the need to recharge.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I'm going to make a huge assumption here.
Yeah.
And you're going to put me right if I'm wrong. What I'm figuring is your programs that you run on this are not trying to take an introvert and make them an extrovert.
No. Because, sorry, I had to move back from the mic because I was going to shout otherwise.
Yeah.
I've seen so many courses like that where it's like how to be more extroverted.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And all that does is reinforce the fact that we're not okay as who we are.
Yeah.
And bearing in mind that this happens from young childhood onwards, by the time youngsters get into the workplace for the first time, they've probably got this overriding sense that they're not okay as they are.
Yeah.
Because that maybe they're broken or need fixing because they've been given feedback continually that says, push yourself forward, speak up more, do this, do that, rather than...
Yeah.
Play to your strengths.
Yeah.
And that's what we need to help introverts do.
Absolutely. And I wanted to raise that because in line with what you were saying earlier about the common misapprehensions about what introversion and extroversion are, is we have this thing that one's not so good and one's better. So therefore, you've got to take and move them from one place to the other. And of course, nothing could be further than the truth because it won't work.
No.
It's like taking Usain Bolt and making him a cross-country runner. Yeah. It ain't going to work.
Yeah.
Yeah. No matter what you do, it ain't going to work.
Exactly.
He's a sprinter, and that's the end of it. Absolutely. So can we kind of pick your brain a little bit and ask you about the kind of things that you do on your programs. I mean,
yeah.
So I want to kind of talk about your business now.
Yeah.
What's your program involved? How do you do it? Well, you know, tell us all the details.
Yeah. Okay. And there are a number of different programs.
Right.
So, if we look at some of the basic things that introverts typically need, the first is going to be a program that I run called Flip Your Limiting Beliefs.
Right.
Because again, the feedback that introverts have had will have them believe that actually they can't do this. There's no way I could do a presentation. There's no way I can be a leader. There's no way I can do any of those things. So what we need to do is deconstruct those beliefs and say, actually, none of that is necessarily true. Let's figure out what is true and let's help you understand what beliefs grounded in reality are going to serve you going forward. Mm. So that's one of the early pieces we do. I've just run a whole series of masterclasses on authentic assertiveness, because often people are taught to be assertive by you square your shoulders, you look them straight in the eye and you say this.
Make them have it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But actually, authentic assertiveness is about me tapping into what rights do I have? What is being trampled over here in terms of my feelings, my opinions, my beliefs, my rights, my needs? Once I can tap into that, then I can start to really build a case for how I'm going to respond in that situation.
Right.
So it's not just about what we say. It's about really tapping into our feelings and then knowing that you have both a right and a responsibility to respond to it. Because one of my favorite quotes is from Tony Gaskins. And what he says is, you teach people how to treat you by what you allow, what you stop, and what you reinforce.
Right.
And all the while, introverts are being discriminated against in the workplace, and you don't say anything, you don't stand up for yourself.
Mm.
We're teaching people that it's okay to do that to
us. Sure.
And actually, that's one of the things we need to stop. So it's also about tapping into real confidence as well.
Yeah. Okay. So that's your starting point in terms of people that come along. Can I ask you, I've got a real frog in my throat. I don't know what it is today. Sorry about
you
that.
You said your frogs were a problem.
I told you. I did tell you frogs are a problem. How easy do you find it, Joe, to attract introverts to do the program in the first place?
Not easy, because most of us, as I say, have had this thing about, you know, why would I stick my hand up and own up to being an introvert?
Sure.
Because there are so many negative connotations. Fortunately, people like Susan Cain have done a great job. Her book Quiet and her TEDx talk really started to open the doors around what it means to be an introvert. And because I often go in on the back of the diversity, equity and inclusion agenda, because this is neurodiversity we're talking about here.
Yeah.
And functional neuroimaging studies show that the brains of introverts and extroverts light up differently when stimulated in the same way. So this isn't a choice. You know, I'm not choosing to be an introvert. Nothing has made me be an introvert. It's the way I'm wired. So my little saying now is, I'm not weird, I'm wired differently. So this for me is about helping people stand up and have that DEI agenda as the thing that they can stand behind to push this forward. So it is getting much easier. And some organisations, of course, I can imagine if they put something around saying, we've got this special course on for introverts, who wants to do it? Everyone would step back a pace. You know, nobody would put themselves forward. But we've got so many introverts who, as I say, are overlooked, undervalued. They're not being given the opportunities to reach those leadership positions, to take on the exciting projects, because people are still labelling them as unambitious, lacking confidence, all those sorts of things.
Yeah.
That's the thing to bust.
I was smiling there about your course titles. Many years ago, I used to do leadership training as well, and I was hired by a massive bank to do internal customer service training. Well, everybody was, we don't need that. We know how to deal with customers. Do you think they'd be paying all this money if you knew how to do that? Anyway, nobody wanted to do the course. And the management came to me and they went, because it was a voluntary thing as well.
Yeah.
They weren't ordered to do it. They had to volunteer and nobody volunteered to do it. And they said, oh, what do we do? I said, we'll just change the name of the course. And they went, well, how's that going to work? I went, watch. So I said, I changed the name of the course to Improving Your Consulting Skills.
And they would have loved it.
And it was packed. It was absolutely packed. And I just did exactly the same course on customer service, and everybody loved it because it was developing their consulting skills.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you're right. You know, it's how we present these things as well, isn't it, in terms of what makes people want to sign up to it.
I've just closed the doors to a 7-week program called Introvert Rising.
Right.
And I went out to the introvert community and said, you know, I gave them a few options for names, and that's the one they came up with.
Right.
Because actually they said that, you know, that's how they feel they want to be, is kind of rising up and rising through. So I'm also hoping that there's going to be a rebellion, you know, that Introvert Rising. I can see a bit of a...
Come the glorious
day. Absolutely.
Yeah. We're going to have a revolution.
Yeah.
It's interesting, isn't it? And I think it's, and you've made reference to this already, Joe, it's part of a more general thing about understanding people and not being so fixed in how we treat people. And I've always had a big thing about our education system and how one-dimensional it is. You know, it's all about academic stuff. And you go, really? What about the 70% of people that are rubbish at academic stuff?
Yep.
You're going to write them all off because they haven't got a C or whatever it is this week in GCSEs. You know, it's just nonsense. The amount of people I know that never even finished school that became incredibly successful in later life because their skill sets were different to an academic skill sets, and both are valid, yet we only ever focus on one. And it's a little bit like here when we talk about people at work in leadership positions or sales positions, or what we need from people is we seem to focus on those that are loudest and most outgoing and all the rest of it. And you go, but what about everybody else? And what about the skills that they possess?
And
it isn't just about introversion and extroversion. It's about how people's minds are wired and the kind of things they see, you know. And I'm being a bit generalist here, but, you know, loud, outgoing people are great at being loud and outgoing, but how good are they at understanding in depth something that's going on, you know, or doing an analysis?
Yeah.
I don't know.
How good are they at listening to understand rather
absolutely.
Than just to respond?
Yeah. One of the things I used to do in my – I don't do training programs anymore, but I did many years ago. And one of the things I loved, which I came across early, was a chap called Richard Nelson Bowles, who wrote a book called What Colour Is Your Parachute?
Yeah,
you come across
I've
it.
I've got it on the bookshelf.
Okay.
Yeah.
And one of the things in that, it's a mighty tome as well. It's a huge book. He used to produce
it every year.
He used to produce it every year.
Yeah.
Sadly, he passed away a couple of years ago.
Right.
But I think they still produce it. But one of the things in there is about transferable skills. Now, we talk a lot about transferable skills, but this is slightly different. His take on transferable skills was slightly different. And what he said is every human being, there are three sets of transferable skills. Skills with people, skills with data, and skills with things. And everybody has a little bit of all of them, but we tend to focus on one. When I discovered that and started looking at it, that became for me the touch point of I could understand almost anybody by understanding their pattern, whether they were a people, data, or things person primarily.
Yeah.
And from then on, you fully understood the way that they behaved.
And that's what creates an inclusive culture where people really can start to play to their strengths.
Absolutely, yeah. So you offer these programs to the public?
Yes, to the public. I also work with organisations. I have two kind of threads running alongside each other. One is to introverts themselves and public or within an organisation. But the other thing I do is I run a consultancy with the organisations to help highlight and shake out where the extroversion bias is, because it's hiding in plain sight.
Yeah.
It's hiding in their recruitment processes.
Yeah.
It's hiding in their learning and development and their career planning for people. Yeah.
Mm.
It hides in meetings. So, you know, spontaneous meetings work well for extroverts because they think on their feet, because we have slightly different communication process. They don't work for introverts. Mm. We have a think, say, think communication process. So don't put me on the spot and ask... expect me to give a real good answer.
It's interesting that you say that. And one of the things that I see quite often due to some of the things I do these days is the interview process.
Oh.
And the interview process is almost entirely confrontational.
Yeah?
Yeah. It's two people or a gang of people and one person sat in a room throwing daft questions at each other. Where do you see yourself in 5 years' time? Yeah, yeah. You know, what, tell us your greatest weaknesses and all that nonsense.
Are you a team player?
Yeah. And I'm a team player, but capable of working on my own. You know, my greatest weakness is I work too hard. All the normal bull that you come out with in these things, because our interview process is rubbish. It's really rubbish.
It is.
Interestingly, a good friend of mine, Amanda Parvin, who's an HR consultant, she's very interested in people with mental health issues. Yeah. And one of the things that she found very early on is people on the mild autism spectrum get absolutely freaked out by the interview process. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And she developed a completely different way of doing interviews, which is to go for a walk.
Yeah.
And if you have one, with a dog.
Yeah.
And so you walk side by side. You're not facing off against each other. Yeah. You'd walk side by side and chat.
Yeah.
And what a fabulous way to do an interview.
Yeah, exactly.
And I bet you get more reasonable stuff out of someone, even if they're an extrovert, you get more reasonable stuff out of someone doing that than you would sitting there asking them the same stupid, daft questions you ask everybody.
And not giving them time to respond, because that's the other thing.
Yeah.
I've sat in on assessment panels where people are marked down because they didn't say very much. Yeah. Hang on a minute, but what did they say? What was the quality of what they said?
And
that gets ignored. So, spot on.
It is. It's one of the things that drives me nuts about the whole thing is that we're incredibly bad at interviewing people anyway, you know, because so many people that do the interviews really have no skill at it whatsoever. So they've just got pre-formulated questions.
Absolutely.
And it's nonsense. Absolutely. I love it. So you've got these kind of two strings to your bow, Joe, that you do. I just want to finish off because it's a fascinating subject, and I love what you do, and I love the fact that it's about understanding people and their skills and their talents and their abilities and their desires and their drives, and I think that's really important. We talk a lot about diversity and equality and all those kind of things, but again, we get a bit formulaic about it, and it all becomes a formula that, you know, doesn't really do very much.
Yeah.
Whereas I just think it would be really nice if we just understood people and what their talents are.
Absolutely. Yeah. Take the time to really understand and figure out how to help people articulate their strengths. Mm. So I remember many, many times people would say to me, you wouldn't believe it now, but you're so quiet. Are you all right? What's the matter with you?
Mm. And then that puts you even more on the spot, doesn't
it? Absolutely. Yeah. And I used to mumble some kind of apology. And what I do now is I say, thank you for noticing. I'm an introvert, and one of my strengths is that I'm able to really notice what's going on, what's being said as well as what's not being said, and fill in the gaps. And I can't do that if I'm speaking all the time. So thank you for noticing that I'm quiet.
Mm.
What a difference that makes rather than mumbling an apology.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's interesting as well, and I don't know if there's any general trend here, but I tend to find that us introverts have a kind of slightly wider view on what's going on, because we tend to observe rather than participate in a lot of things. So, you know, I'll go to an event, I'll go to a networking meeting, and if no one's talking to me, I don't particularly go out of my way to go and find someone to talk to.
No.
I prefer to stand on the edge and watch everybody.
Yeah.
And I go, oh, you look interesting. You're very animated, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, you're getting a bit angry over there. You know, you observe things and you see what's going on around you. And then I don't know how true this is in general, but for me, I quite often find a large number of people have no real awareness of what's going on around them. They're all, boom, mate, you have it.
Yeah.
But they haven't noticed anything going on around them. They haven't.
Yeah, self-awareness is
Is that something that you are familiar with?
Yeah, and it's something that I observe a lot. So one of the proven kind of facts is that more empaths are introverted, so not only do they pick up all of those things, but they feel them quite often as well.
Yeah.
And so, yes, we are great observers. We do notice those things, and we tend to trust kind of our sensations that we're getting around those. So, you know, gut instinct and intuition are often finely more finely tuned for us than they are for other people.
Absolutely. But Joe, it's fascinating talking to you. It's a fascinating and brilliant and interesting subject. We wish you continued success with your businesses. If people want to find out more about your business and what you do, what's the best way to do that?
My website has pretty much everything. So all the W's, flourishingintroverts.com. And there you'll find the questionnaire that'll tell you what type of introvert you are, my TEDx talk, my podcast, my TV show, my blog. It's all there.
Fantastic. Jo, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Flourishingintroverts.com.
She's certainly flourishing.
She is well flourished.
And all the things she's doing.
She's flourished.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's a flourishing flower.
Flourished.
Person.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Fantastic. No, thank you so much for that, Jo. Do check that out. The link to Jo's website is on the Kent Business Radio website and will be there forever. For the moment, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And Wayne Cunnington says he's an oldish codger too, listening to us, but he says it's such an interesting conversation. So many never diagnosed. I'm a bit like that. I'm only outspoken with people once I get to know them.
Yeah.
So listening in there, well done, Wayne.
Yeah. I've got an interview now, which is last of today's interviews, with businesses based at the Business Terrace in Maidstone. I caught up with a chap called Jamie Finch, and Jamie runs a business called Road and Sewers.
Rodents?
Roads and Sewers.
Oh, Roads and
Roads
Sewers.
Roads and Sewers.
I say. So, was there a pong there?
Yeah, no, there isn't. Basically, they're planning consultants. And they, you know, when there's any big development, they plan the road network and the sewer network and all the other infrastructure that goes around a big project. It's actually fascinating. So let's have a hear what Jamie had to say.
Yeah.
I'm in a Business Terrace in Maidstone, and I've been joined on the Bunker Show by Jamie Finch. Jamie, good afternoon. Welcome to the Business Bunker Show.
Thank you very much.
It's a pleasure to meet you, my friend. You run an organisation called Roads and Sewers for Planning.
Yeah, Roads and Sewers for Planning and Design. So we've been running for just over 5 years now. I've been at the Business Terrace for a little over a year now.
Okay, cool. So, five-year-old business. Tell us, I mean, I guess we can guess to a little bit, and the name's a bit of a giveaway, but tell us what you actually do.
Yeah, so you're absolutely right. The name does give it away. We typically specialise in highways, drainage, flood risk and transportation issues. So roads and sewers for planning and design. Quite a lucky name to catch for the business.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, I like it. So let me just make sure I understand. You offer a consultancy and advice business?
That's right, yeah. We are a design consultancy. We offer professional advice. Sometimes people ask us if we take on contracting work, i.e. building work, which unfortunately we're unable to offer. But obviously we are very well connected with other local businesses, so we're able to recommend wherever it's appropriate.
Cool. So let's take a hypothetical example. I'm a construction company, and I've acquired a site. I'm going to build something on there, and I need to know how to drain it and what to do with the waste.
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, we can go a whole lot further than that. So so whether it comes down to the whole layout of the site. Now, one of the things that we mainly specialise in is infrastructure, and that's one of the key things. One of the key parts of every development is making sure that yes, you can drain the site, you can access the site, and everything is laid out appropriately and in the right proportions as well. So we can offer services similar to that and make sure that everything that's going in the ground is planned correctly and appropriately before they get too far into the detail.
Yeah, absolutely. I own a business in Canterbury, and you smiled as soon as I said that, didn't you? You know what I'm going to say. I'm going to say that magic word, Stobmarsh. Oh. and, of course, building work came to a grinding halt in Canterbury because of Stobmarsh and toxic waste into the marsh area.
That's right. It has caused quite a few issues. It's something that we also get involved with. Typically what we will do with developers, builders, is we will prepare a failed drainage strategy with a nutrient assessment, which is bolted onto that. essentially trying to navigate a way through to try and present a case which shows the least mitigation or even a neutral situation for the nutrients, which can be challenging at times, but people are beginning to be able to navigate their way through now.
Yeah, I know. I'm this is well outside my expertise, and I may be talking nonsense, but I know talking to a number of developers in East Kent, a lot of them were looking at quite expensive water treatment plants they were putting in themselves in order to carry on with whatever they were doing.
That is one of the mechanisms available, although it doesn't always provide a neutral situation. It significantly reduces the level of phosphorus, mainly phosphorus and nitrogen, that's being released into the catchment. But sometimes offsetting is very key to being able to present a neutral situation or a significant betterment to what's already there. There are updates to the Natural England guidance which may pave a way through and hopefully cut through some of the difficulties that we've had over the last 18 months so far.
Yeah, I mean, there's been quite a bit of news about various things going in the sea and stuff like that as well.
Yes, yeah, that I think is a separate issue, but I think if all of the organisations in that industry were able to pull together and come forward with a collective mitigation strategy, I think that would resolve the whole Stodmarsh issue a lot quicker.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Now, we kind of concentrated on drains and foul water and sewage and stuff, but of course, another part of your name is roads. So give us an idea of the kind of things that you help with the road infrastructure.
So we have a number of different kinds of clients. So and typically when people will think about roads and sewers for planning and design, people automatically assume, well, it must be for residential development, which is not always the case. We have residential developer clients. We deal with commercial development. Agricultural development, which is very good. So we're very keen on supporting British agriculture, but local authorities and even householder applications. Whether it's a new access into a development whether it's a private or adoptable road or adopted road. Someone might just need a new access for their property. We've had cases where someone's bought a property and their current access is on quite a dangerous blind bend, and they wanted to relocate it somewhere where it's much more appropriately positioned. The visibility splays are much more manageable, so it's. From householder applications right up to sort of major residential applications. So all manners of highway.
Now, I can relate to that. I mean, I was saying to you off air, I have a house in the country, although it is on a main road, but I had no neighbours until recently. And strangely enough, for many, many years, the council turned down planning permission because of the road access. And then all of a sudden, they started granting planning permission. And what used to be easy for me to get on the main road is now a nightmare because there's cars coming from all directions.
Yeah, I mean, whenever we help with applications, and typically they're for residential applications, whether it's a new access or whether it goes right into the realms of being a transport statement for a new development. So we'll look at the existing trip rates for vehicles in the area, whether it is really about making sure that the local highway network can deal with the capacity of increased traffic.
Sorry to interrupt. Is that something that you would do? Would you do a traffic survey of what's existing?
Yes. So the surveys themselves. So of course we can't survey everything ourselves. We use a lot of suppliers. So we'll ask different suppliers to go out and collect data for us. Right. Once all of that information is in, we will then present that in the form of a transport statement, and we will present the case to demonstrate whether it is or is not safe, you know, to put forward for development. And it's a case of making sure that if there are any shortfalls in the local infrastructure, we can identify areas for improvement, which is often, you know, often misunderstood by a lot of the public sometimes. Because where we want to try and promote the development, and the developers obviously want their housing development, let's say housing development as an example, they want that to come forward. But in doing so, there is actually a lot of benefit to that, because there is often some improvement work that is followed up. All things have to be considered and presented appropriately.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is going to sound silly to you, but for me, it's one of the things I noticed. So, for instance, in the residential developments near me, one of the first things they did was build pavements, which didn't exist. You know, there were no pavements down the road at all. And part of their infrastructure is to put in pavements, which is an improvement because it means you don't get run over.
That's right, yeah. And, you know, that really sort of fits into the connectivity and in allowing pedestrians access to other parts of the, you know, towns, villages. And with the, you know, government incentives and trying to promote, you know, walking, cycling and, you know, alternative modes of transport, you know, try and improve on air quality and cut down on traffic congestion, yeah, it's essential. But again, you know, it's striking that balance between achieving those objectives without over urbanisation of the area. So it is a difficult balance to strike.
Yeah, for sure. Jamie, it's fascinating talking to you, a whole new insight into what goes on around us. Thank you so much for that. Thank you for joining us on the Business Monkey Show. It's been a pleasure to talk to you. Do you have a website where people can find out more about what you do?
Absolutely. Yeah, you can find us on www.roadsandsewers.co.uk.
Fantastic. Roadsandsewers.co.uk. Check it out. It's interesting. Nice one. Thank you so much for joining us, Jamie, and continued success.
Thank you very much.
That was Jamie Finch of Roads and Sewers. And I bet you didn't know that was going to be as interesting as it was as an interview.
Well, yeah, and as Wayne Cunnington, our avid listener, says, you were plumbing the depths of a joke there, Jules.
I see what you did there, Wayne. Yeah,
he's quite a wag.
Yeah, you could sue her.
And Sarah Marsh Collins has reminded us that one of our presenters, the lovely Zeenat Noorani, who's a mental health coach, and she presents the Mindset Matters on a Friday, has just had a little op. A little operation, so wishing her a speedy recovery.
Yeah, speedy recovery.
Which was yesterday, and that's from Sarah Marsh Collins, sending lots of kisses to Zeenat. I'm sure Zeenat's tuning in.
I'm sure she is.
Yeah.
Joanne's already replied to it, but there was a tweet from Sarah as well about the things that Joanne was talking about. Oh, yeah, and she's just given us that shout-out, which you've ably read out as well.
And did you see...
Here it is. Sorry, I just found it. Yeah. Sarah was saying, really interesting listening to Joanne. I have always felt badly for introverts in the workplace. It takes a good manager to see the work an introvert does over the noise of an extrovert, which is exactly what Jo was talking about. Yeah.
Tracy Ferguson has sent a lovely photo of herself.
Her and Pip.
Her and the lovely Pip drums.
Yep.
Yeah, Phil, in other words.
Yep.
Phil Pip.
Fantastic. Just a heads up, coming in January, but I'm telling you about it now because you need to book your place fairly soon.
Is it a drumming lesson?
Well, there are drumming lessons coming from lovely Phil on Junk Jam. But no, this is the Kent and Medway Business Summit at the University of Kent. Taking place at the Sibson Building, which is the business building on the campus at Canterbury. Friday the 13th. Are you sure, guys? That's not a good day to pick, is it? Friday the 13th of January 2023 in the award-winning Simpson Building on the Canterbury campus of the University of Kent, bringing together over 300 businesses, key policymakers and leading academics, the 6th annual summit will focus on the latest news from key projects and leading expert keynote speakers from across the county, alongside Q&A and debate on topics including productivity, sustainability, placemaking and skills. To celebrate the summit being back in its January slot for 2023, we're offering an early bird discount for anyone who signs up for the event over the coming months. You can find all the details and a link through to the full lineup and booking details by going to kempersradio.co.uk/calendar. So do check that out. Also, just to remind you, sorry about this, but it's coming. Making Tax Digital, time is running out. You need to start complying with Making Tax Digital law, and you need to start doing it today. To comply with the tax legislation and where you can find compatible software, if you go to fsb.org.uk/resources page, how to prepare for Making Tax Digital, they've got loads of useful information for you there. Please don't ignore it. You've got to do it. I know it's a pain. But everything's going digital, and that's the problem that we face.
Yeah, difficult. Everything's digital, and my Alexa, as you know, I'm falling out of love with her. She was so annoying last night when I was reading, because I take so much homeopathy at the moment. I have 15-minute timers. And she was saying, "I'm sorry, I don't understand," like all night. And in the end, I said, "Are you listening?" And I just turned her off.
You had an argument with your Alexa.
I turned her off.
Fell out.
Yeah. And she wouldn't, then she wouldn't play my tunes.
And then she wouldn't talk to you anymore.
No. Yeah. And she wouldn't play the tunes. And she's very annoying. And then I say, "Play my music." And she says, "Shuffling your music." But if I ask her to shuffle my music, she doesn't understand that.
Yeah.
It's very annoying. So I went back to my alarm clock.
I thought you'd dispense with your Alexa the last time you fell out with her.
Yeah, I have, but she's still in the bedroom because I find her quite useful for things. But she turned on my salt lamp this morning, which was nice to wake up to because I get up earlier for scoff and quaff. So she turned my little salt lamp on. So I wake up to a salt lamp.
Do you find that this technology is now so ubiquitous, it's annoying? I've got an Apple Watch as well, and quite often it will text things that I've said to somebody else, to my mum or whatever. Yeah, because even though I got Siri turned off, it will suddenly start transcribing what I'm saying.
So it's listening.
Yeah. And I'll be going, "Oh, Jules, for Christ's sake, shut up." And my mum will ring me and go, "Why has Jules got to shut up?" And I go, "What?" And she go, "You've texted me."
Yeah.
And I don't understand.
You must be pressing a button.
I'm not doing anything. It's technology. It's
there was
horrible.
A guy at the garden centre the other day when I was buying stuff for the fish pond, and his Google Maps was just still chatting to him. You know, turn right, don't turn left. You know, you're up Badger's Hill.
Yeah.
He was oblivious. It was quite funny. But you know, if you're elderly, I mean, I'm not even elderly. Some people just don't do tech.
Yeah.
And now everybody's expecting you to sign on for everything. I got an appointment very quickly for London for a neurologist, AstraZeneca damage. And it made me, can't just send me the appointment. It's like I had to log in and do this and give them this and that and the other. It was really annoying.
Oh, I
just want the date and the time.
I had a whole weekend of that with somebody sent me a link to sign up for something I wanted.
Yeah.
I wanted to sign up for it. And then it tried to force me to use Google to do it. Then it changed the password on all my Google accounts. And then, you know.
That's awful.
It was just a nightmare. I had to abandon it all, start
over. You're better off just to go out and play with your newts, your crested newts.
Exactly.
Have a bit of fun.
Anyway, we've reached the end of another show. Yeah. Thank you all so much for joining us. It was a pleasure to hear from our guests. We'll be back with another show next week. Have a fantastic week, everybody. And we'll see you all soon. Bye for now.
Bye-bye.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.